I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to another episode of Everyone is Hot, the podcast that talks about your favorite stealth sex symbols and the film or TV show that turned you on to them. I'm Michael Stevens.
And I'm Shelley Brooks. Ooh, Michael, we've got a really fun guest today, do we not?
Yes, we have a terrific guest, artist, writer, and host of the Self Worst podcast, which me and Shelley have both guested on, Brad Pearson, everyone.
Oh, yes, hello.
Children.
The children are so excited.
Thanks, children.
I mean, that's great. You know, this movie was very slyly marketed to kids.
Yes.
But it's definitely not a kid's movie. There were toys and everything. Like,
yeah, I will say, I don't, you know, tell me if you don't feel comfortable telling your age. But so, I mean, was this like, you know, something that was prevalent in your childhood, this movie?
No, that's okay. A couple of fun facts about me. I was born the year the first Terminator came out,
really?
1984.
Nice.
So that would make me about the same age as John Connor.
That
if they're set, you know, in the year they came out. Also, Linda Hamilton, my birthday twin.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
God, she's got a lot of twins, which we will talk
about. She's got a lot of twins. We'll get into the twin talk.
We'll talk about it later in the podcast. But so we've kind of given it away. But
Sorry.
But not at all. So, Brad, who is your stealth sex symbol, and what movie are we talking about?
We are talking about Linda Hamilton in the 1991 classic Terminator 2, T2 Judgment Day.
Yes. Oh. We are so excited. Michael and I just realized that we are revisiting T2 because we talked about Essa Pathamurkison in a previous episode, and we are thrilled to be talking about Linda Hamilton because,
honestly,
oh my God.
You talked about her just as her small role as Mrs. Dyson.
And yes,
we did.
Yes, we did.
We didn't go into Reba the Mail Lady. That wasn't the focus.
No, we didn't, but we can in the next episode in T2-3.
Yeah, no, it was a relatively early episode, I think, Michael, which I think that was kind of like we were getting into like the nitty gritty of like what this podcast is, of like really getting into the character actors.
But honestly, second time watching it for this show, like probably 100th time watching it in life, I like could talk about it forever because there are so many.
It is one of those movies. It's just, it's kind of like, during the 90s, it was kind of always on TV. It's just a great movie to watch with your dad on a Saturday.
Yes.
I watched this movie, I don't know how many times, with my pops. It's just one of those movies. I definitely didn't see it when it first came out because, you know, it's a rated R movie. You're not supposed to like bring a like fucking 5-year-old kid into the theater to go see it. But I knew what the movie was, and I knew the whole plot of the movie just by osmosis of all my like little dirtbag latchkey kid friends whose parents did let them see it right when it came out. So I would just hear the entire plot repeated to me from those, you know, like classmates and people at my daycare or whatever, you know, who are all just like the little like dirtbag John Connor kids.
Yes.
you know, just the bad kids who smoked and stole stuff and rode motorbikes and stuff. And
like, daycare? Jesus.
Yeah. Just, I mean, I knew some pretty, you know,
toddlers,
some pretty fierce
like,
kids.
Little, cigarettes. Yeah.
But like they told me about it. So like by the time I actually saw it, I knew beat for beat everything that happened just based on like what I'd seen, like clips of it on TV and then like, and then just hearing about it. So I knew the entire plot already, which is pretty amazing.
Well, gosh, you might know the entire plot, but some of our listeners might not. So, Michael, would you like to tell the listeners who aren't familiar with Terminator 2 what the movie is about?
If you were like raised in East Berlin or something and you've never seen Terminator 2.
If you grew up in a cave, if you had like a Nell upbringing.
There's
a Terminator
in
the wind.
All right. A cyborg identical to the one who failed to kill Sarah Connor must now protect her 10-year-old son, John, from an even more advanced and more powerful cyborg. So that's what it's about.
As far,
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like I should have been doing the dun, 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 dun,
oh, listen,
it.
We're adding in music in okay, post. Good, good, good. Come on. Give us a little credit.
Oh, hearing
as far as IMDb synopses go, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they get it on like the big blockbuster Hollywood movies because those are kind of hard to fuck up plot wise.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We had a rough one recently for Clash by Night, the Fritz Lang movie.
Yeah. It was like, oh, it's a touching story about a boy and his stepfather or something. You know, it's like this kind of misses the mark of what Terminator 2 is about a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh God!
Some foster parents who were treated very badly.
Yeah,
I'm very tempted to write my own silly plot of Terminator 2. Maybe throw in a little Home Alone in there.
Oh yeah,
little kid getting into hijinks
ensue.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What if John Connor was a little bit more Macaulay Culkin? Like that.
That is an interesting point because John Connor, like again, this movie was supposed to be for kids or wasn't supposed to be for kids, but it was. And John Connor is definitely, you know, he's the kid stand-in, and he is in that era of like, you know, Bart Simpson and you know, he has that like, you know,
he's a bad kid. He's a little Dennis the Menace. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a little Dennis the Menace. He's a little asshole. And like, he's got that cool like haircut, like one of the bullies from The Simpsons. And he's got the Public Enemy shirt.
Yeah.
Like, he's just great.
I mean, it could have gone a very different way if there weren't robots in that part where his friend is like, hey, John, the cop is looking for you. It could have been like, oh my gosh, hijinks are ensuing now.
Yeah, there was Kevin McAllister. There was all these like mischievous boys in the early 90s.
That's
honestly
so true.
If you made the Terminators like Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci, I feel like there's a whole that's a mashup movie that like honestly I'm pissed off that I said it. Now AI is gonna steal it and
the AI, you know. I mean, it's coming for us all as you know, we all know by now that what's happening. We've seen the writing on the wall. But yeah, give it 5 years, there's gonna be, you know, you can just plug in whatever.
Yeah, I mean the movie takes place in 2029 and watching it now.
Terrifying.
Oh God! Look, we're gonna talk a little bit later in the episode about years and futuristic movies. I feel, but
yes,
the fact
will,
that
there is one thing that AI cannot do.
What
and that
can it
is,
not do?
That is read some sexy trivia, baby. Ah,
of course. Of course.
Only a human can really get sexy with some trivia.
Only now, a human. The original sex machines can get you listening slick.
Yes, we're no gigolo Joes. We're real people. Brad, we'd like to play this little game called the Sexy Trivia Game, where we read some trivia about the movie to get the listeners slick and warm and ready to go.
Right, nice and liquid metal for you.
Oh, yeah. T-1000 style, baby.
How about I start us off?
Oh, please do.
special effects guru Stan Winston and his crew studied hours of nuclear test footage in order to make Sarah Connor's nuclear nightmare scene look as realistic as possible. Michael, I'm interrupting this trivia to tell you that this is a scene that haunts my dreams.
I know it would. That's why I made you read it.
I'm very upset. A miniature Los Angeles was made to simulate the scene. Some of the materials used in the miniature that mimicked all the destroyed masonry were monster crackers and shredded wheat. After each take, it would take on average 2 days to set the model up to shoot again. In late 1991, members of several U.S. federal nuclear testing labs unofficially declared it the most accurate depiction of nuclear blast ever created for a fictional motion picture. The special effects team members have stated several times that no scene they've worked on since has received an equivalent amount of praise or emotional feedback from viewers. I'm gonna kill myself.
Now I want you to really see the crackers. I want you to really see the crackers and shredded wheat, though, in your mind's eye.
I like to think of Stan Winston just like munching on the rubble after each take.
Just noshing on some matzo.
That is my favorite piece of trivia about this movie. Ooh, I think
that is going to make it a little bit easier to watch this horrifying scene in the future, knowing it is just matzo. Brad, you want to read number B?
Why, yes. According to director Daddy James Cameron, Linda Hamilton suffered permanent hearing damage in one ear during the elevator shootout because she did not replace her earplugs after removing them between takes. That's one way to get hearing damage.
Yep. That's one way to do it.
Sexy hearing loss. Yes. Michael, do you want to give us number C?
Absolutely. Let's get that thing going again. Get ready to go home with this little factoid about one Robert Patrick, who mimicked the head movements of the American bald eagle for some of his scenes as the T-1000. I'll bet he followed around a couple of cops too. That motherfucker really
he's a right-wing gun guy.
Oh, really?
You know, he's very good.
You know, he also played Elvis and Johnny Cash's dad. And I think it even, what's his name's dad? John C. Reilly in the fake movie that was based on
Walk-on
biopics. Yeah.
No, that was, he was the dad in Justified.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Good save. I was about to put some
interesting. I think is a little
right-wing
guy, but he's very good in the role. And I love the trivia about James Cameron being like his character needed to be like a kind of like compact little guy who could like, you know, run real fast, and like in comparison to the hulking Arnold. And yes, it always reminds me of Ishtar and the quote that Warren Beatty has early in the movie where he's like, "You ever see a big sports car? Women love little men."
Yeah.
I'm like Robert Patrick, he got it. You know, you gotta be a little guy to get the juice.
Gotta be a little guy.
Yeah, he's a small guy, but he manages to still be so menacing compared to the the Terminator, who's this big tank of a person.
Tiny and tight.
It's really interesting. They do the Tolly and Smalley thing. We love a Tolly and Smalley.
Yes.
And they like his physicality in that movie is just really outstanding. It's kind of a bummer he didn't, like, him and Linda Hamilton didn't really get a whole lot of like notable work outside of this, because they're both so fantastic in this and they both put like so much into it.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder, like, is that sort of like the curse of being in like a really iconic movie and like an iconic role, that like it makes it kind of hard to do anything else because you are so seen as that one person? I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, that's, you know, that's what they say about the Norman Bates guy.
Tony Curtis. Which, I mean, he did like a bunch of like great movies. Like, I mean, he was like in Orson Welles's The Trial. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. he did some great stuff, but he is forever Norman Bates. He's the Norman Bates guy.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the physicality, so when did you first see this movie and like, were you immediately interested in Linda Hamilton? And I mean,
I definitely didn't see it when I was like a child, but I definitely saw it when I was pretty young. And probably, you know, prepubescent, not really thinking about all that really, but, so it's more upon like adult, revisitations of this movie that I'm kind of like, okay, what's up? You know, that does it for me, you know?
When do you think it struck you that like you were not just like into the movie, but like you were into the character and into the actor?
You know, I don't know. I mean, like I've seen her in some other things, and like even comparing her in this movie to like her in Terminator 1, when she's, you know, she's just this like, she's just this lady with a job. Like she just has a little Honda Elite scooter. She's got those cool outfits. She's just this like working girl.
Yeah.
And then she transforms. And in this movie, she's, you know, she's, I think one of the things they get right that a lot of movies don't, is she is appropriately traumatized from the events of the first movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I think, a lot of serial movies and TV shows where the characters just kind of keep going along and they're just sort of, they don't really change a whole lot. And you're like, no, what you went through would fucking destroy a person and build them up again. Like, that is not a, I don't know. That's not a thing. But yeah, I don't know if I can pinpoint like an exact moment where I was like, oh yeah, Linda Hamilton kind of fine. You know, it's just like, it just sort of slowly occurred to me, you know, like that first scene where she's like doing pull-ups in her cell. She's like turned her bed over and is doing pull-ups on the bar, and like the definition on her shoulders.
Her shoulders. Oh my God. Her shoulders, like, her back. Like,
it just, I mean, it really, watching this again in preparation for the show, like it really inspired me to like, I gotta get back in the gym. I gotta like, I'm trying to do a pull up from a dead hang, and that's like my goal for the summer. I'm almost there, but it is hard to do. And like, you know, like she really did all of that. That's the other thing. Like she trained, she did weapons training. She did, I forget what, like a bunch of martial arts training, judo and stuff. And like extreme, like physical training and dieting to like really get down to this, like, pretty crazy frame that she has in this movie.
It's crazy how she looks in this movie, and definitely hear you on the point of like seeing her transition. It is fucking insane. She, like, Linda Hamilton went from the first Terminator to a lesser known TV show called Beauty and the Beast.
With way back. Ron Perlman?
With Ron Perlman playing like a monster man from the sewers, which
it's another you know, she teams up again with like a big boy, a big old lug.
She loves the big boy.
And that show, if y'all are ever trying to revisit some old TV, is it's one of those like Lion King style things where it's just like, I think it's hot that she's into this monster man, and I don't know why. And then she goes from that to Terminator 2. And my God, she is a weapon.
Well, it is really interesting that like you chose Terminator 2 versus the first Terminator, because like she, like you say, like underwent this like physical transformation. And like, I think in the first movie, she's maybe what would be considered more like stereotypically like feminine. Like, you know, she's a bit, you know, softer, like, you know, quote unquote, like prettier, not prettier, but like,
she's more girly for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And also so much of like the plot in that movie like hinges on, you know, Michael Biehn's character like knocking her up, and like, you know, she
that movie, I mean, I like the first one and I love her performance in the first one, and like even throughout that movie you see her really transform. Mm-hmm. Like her first line in the movie is she's like, you know, she like spills coffee on somebody at work who's like, oh no, oops, oh, I'm late to work and oh, I'm so flustered and oh, I can't, oh no. And then like the last line in the movie, I think her last line is, you're terminated, motherfucker. And then she smashes him in the hydraulic press. And like, it's a believable transition that she goes through, but still like she is more or less like a damsel in distress through most of the movie. And it's like the badass saving her is Michael Biehn, where this movie, they kind of play musical chairs with the role. There's like, so like Terminator is the protector and then T-1000 is the unstoppable force. And the, you know, John Connor is more the like innocence, must be protected. And and the way Linda Hamilton in this movie is just not for a moment is she helpless. Like they go to rescue her from the psych ward and what's she doing? She's already busting out of there. She doesn't need that fucking help.
Like she's tells her already son, like, on that it. He shouldn't have come. Like well, so that's really interesting to me. That, like, I mean, she's this kind of non-traditional woman in the second movie. Like, you know, that she's tough and she fights, and like she doesn't have any of the trappings of like traditional like femininity. So is that something that, like, when you as like a movie viewer, like, is that something that like you tend to find appealing? Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, if you ask me about like my type in general, I don't know if I necessarily have one. I feel like I tend to gravitate actually more towards like a girlier type, a more feminine, softer type, a more I don't know, curvaceous, Zaftig kind of type. Sure, but you know, it kind of goes all over the place. And I think just her, the way she acts in this movie is so kind of striking and so interesting and so heroic, that like she really kind of carries the movie. She goes through the most emotions. And that's another like cool thing about her character is like she's never like stoic about what she's doing. She's constantly scared and shaking and crying and and like as she's like unloading a gun into the T-1000, she's like fuck, like she's always still emotional, but she's not helpless, and she's not letting herself like be a victim in any way, which I find kind of, you know, just like cool and refreshing. And I guess if I really want to get like, I don't know, Freudian about it, I guess like my inner child is like a scared little boy. So like, you know, having like a real like badass who's scared and does shit anyway and is hurt and does shit anyway and like doesn't let the pain and doesn't let the fear get to her, like, great.
Yeah, I mean, Michael and I talked earlier about, you know, how much we love the Joe Morton character in this film. And I think that something that really stuck out to me this time watching the movie is when she breaks into his house and, you know, is threatening to kill him, and the way she like falls against the wall with like, you know, her like tears in her eyes, like as she like is contemplating the idea of like taking a life, like even if she like intellectually thinks that it's going to like save millions of people, like the fact that she's got that sensitivity as well as that toughness is, I think, such a beautiful like character note, you know.
She almost did it too. Yeah. Like if the little tyke with the the RC car hadn't hit his foot.
Right.
And I think it was easier then to just like shoot a guy in the back of the head, you know, when she didn't like see his face, didn't see his family, didn't see like fear in his eyes, and then she just couldn't follow through with it, which like, you know, it sets her apart a little bit from John, who just has this inherent morality in him. He's just like, you can't kill people. You just can't. And it, you know, like we were initially describing him as, you know, he's like a bad kid, but he's not really.
He's a
like
very he's, good boy.
He's a rebellious kid, but he's also like a good human. And it just kind of comes from nowhere. Like it kind of is just intrinsic to him and his soul. Like growing up on the road and hanging out with all these like weird, like probably right-wing militia people he did with his mom, you know, and like learning how to shoot and steal and like live underground. He probably didn't get a whole lot in the way of like morality, especially being told like everybody you know is going to be dead soon.
Yeah.
So like, why do they matter? But he still is like, no, they matter.
Yeah.
They matter because they matter. And like, it's just, he's so pure. He's just such a good kid.
I got like a little bit like of like a goose pimples.
I definitely got that from this viewing, like more and more. Oh, he's like a really legitimate, like his initials are JC. He's fucking Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, I definitely got that.
Yeah,
in this
Cameron
viewing.
Doesn't have like a light touch.
Yeah. But it bums me out that like this franchise, I love the first Terminator. I love the second Terminator. And they've done a third movie like every other fucking decade, and they've managed to fuck up one of the characters in a really big, like, significant way. Like, the first Terminator doesn't get that about John Connor. He's just a Shia LaBeouf character. And then they make him Christian Bale in the next one, and that's not interesting. And then they go back. Mm-hmm. And they change all the characters, and they make him the villain in Genesis. And now, and then they finally brought Linda Hamilton back in the most recent third movie reboot of the franchise. And they make her go through, sidebar, they make her go through with the same workouts she did like years ago as a 60-something-year-old woman, which like credit to her, but
she looks amazing again.
She looks amazing.
She's been doing is just living off that Terminator money down in New Orleans, chain smoking, and then like somehow just brought it all back, got her guns back. She's amazing.
She said, well, that's the thing. That's the fucking thing. Like,
that's an interesting thing to me about like Cameron's movies is that, like, you know, I think a lot of filmmakers, you know, really prize like very young women and women who are like very traditionally feminine. And I love Cameron's movies because he loves like a fit, mature woman. Like,
he loves a tough broad.
He loves like a strong arm. Like, I mean, you know, Jeanette Goldstein, I mean, she has like, you know, a relatively small part in this, but I mean, she has a great part where, you know, she gets to, you know, both be the foster mom and like a Terminator. And
she's in, she's in Aliens.
Yeah, doing the pull-ups.
Oh my god!
Like again with the pull-ups, he loves. Yeah, he loves a ripped lady. I'm seeing more of a pattern with James Cameron than I am with myself, honestly. You know, I mean, he married Catherine Bigelow. Like she made Point Break.
Yeah.
Like he loves, you know, like just like a bruiser. You know, which is cool. Like, you know, and like Linda Hamilton, like she can do that, and she can be like this real fucking rogue badass, but still like she's got those pillowy lips, and she's just got like she is so feminine through the movie too. Like she's not, you know, I guess butch would be the term, I don't know, but like she's really not, like she's just a tough lady.
But you know, as a woman watching it, like it's really exciting to see, like, you know, especially like in the early scenes where, like, you know, she is in the hospital or whatever, like that she doesn't look glamorous. It's like, I mean, she has like her, you know, smile lines. She has like a hardness on her face. Like you can see some wrinkles. Like, I mean, she looks like a person. Like she doesn't have these like, you know, glamour shots, like, you know, Vaseline on the lens, whatever. Like, I mean, she looks like a person who has lived a life. And that is so gratifying to see.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I have been looking at pictures of Linda Hamilton and Jeanette Goldstein, and pretty much it's just like women in tank tops, like ripped women in tank tops. And I'm like, as I'm hearing y'all talk, I'm like living my best life and learning like this is like, oh God, I gotta close some of these windows down. I got like a Sigourney Weaver, like Gina Gershon. Up.
Yes. Like, yeah.
This Michael's getting too horny.
This shit, there's no such thing for this show.
No such thing. No.
Hands where we can see him, Michael.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. Hands in the air.
Buff women with guns. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord. I gotta know more. Like, take me through your canon. What was your very first like wild movie crush where you were like, oh shit, life is different than it was before?
I've got a couple of these because I didn't have a whole lot of a latency period. I feel like I matured sexually pretty early, I guess, or like got horny early, you know, just had like weird boy horniness.
Weird boy horniness. Know that very well.
See Michael's episode of my show for reference. I don't know. I mean, I think back, like Nev Campbell definitely comes to mind.
Ooh, yeah.
Again, with those pillowy lips. Uh-huh. And Alicia Silverstone.
Oh my God.
I think probably in Clueless, because that was like the big movie at the time. Yeah. But honestly, Batman and Robin. Her is Batgirl. There's this scene where she like, I mean, she does this, that's like one of her trademarks. She does this like, oopsie, and like bites her bottom lip. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Hey, what's up? Like, yeah.
1997. Oof.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was not really like cognizant about, entertainment at that point. But I have seen recently about how apparently a lot of news about her in that movie was about how she was like too fat for the part, which is crazy to me.
Crazy.
She looked
incredible.
Yeah. She looks so good. And that is the horniest, the most sexual of the Batman movies. I didn't even understand in 1997, like what I was watching. But like in retrospect, everyone's nipples are apparent. There's shots of their
nipples on the bat suit.
Like,
George Clooney's.
Everybody shat on those movies when they came out, but honestly, like, you look at them now and you're just like, oh, this is just fun, dumb, gay Batman. This is campy Adam West Batman. Like, this is just, like, can we not take him so seriously? Like, does not have to be so fucking grim and crazy. Like,
in the post Barbie era, I hope people revisit those Batman because they are really, really, like, fun. Camp 90s action movies.
Yeah. I'm a famous comic book movie hater, but I love a Tim Burton Batman. Ugh.
Oh yeah, those are amazing.
Yeah.
Batman Returns is probably my favorite Batman movie.
Oh yeah. If you've got a Batman that's got like Jack Nicholson and like Prince, like come on.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's good. Shelley,
I implore you to check out the Joel Schumacher Batman movies because they really are from a special time before the big comic book movie became a psychic weapon for our minds, against our minds.
Yeah. You haven't seen them, Shelley?
I haven't seen the Schumacher ones. I've seen like, I know about like, the nipples on the bat suit, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, I've seen very few, I think, comic book movies. I mean, I've seen like the Nolan Batmans. I've seen the, other than that, I mean, like Darkman I've seen,
Darkman. That's a good one.
I do love Darkman. Yeah.
Darkman. And Darkman is good because it's not based on any like existing property. Like,
yeah,
Sam Raimi wanted to do a Shadow movie. They were like, you can't do it. And so he was like, all right, I'll make fucking Darkman. And that's how it got made. And you'll find out all about it when I cast Tim Robinson as Sam Raimi in the Darkman, the Making of Darkman biopic. But
incredible. Yeah. So you had like at a younger age, you had like Alicia Silverstone.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that your taste like changed over time?
I think so. Maybe a little bit. Like, I think especially in terms of like I mean, what comes to mind is body type and what I found myself more attracted to changed because late 90s, early 2000s, it was, you know, it was mostly very skinny women.
Right.
Very like rail thin, no butts, you know, no hips, like yep. Just the low cut jeans.
Yeah, the Kate Moss of it all.
Yeah, the whale tail thing. And like, I was like, yeah, sure, I guess, you know, but like, I think sometimes about like the image that maybe brought me online sexually, like turned puberty on in my brain, like shot the hormones through my body. And it is the cover of Honey by Butterfly, Mariah Carey. With that, like the gold, you know, just like the gold background, and she's got her little midriff out, and like, she's, I wouldn't say chubby, but she's soft, you know, and she has like a soft tummy. And like, I remember just thinking, like, just staring at that and just being like, oh, okay, I feel testosterone coursing through my body for the first time in my life. It's insane. Or you're looking at the image right now.
Yeah, I'm looking.
We can see Michael's face, like
the color really palette,
leaning
like,
into the computer.
The color palette is really good. I see. I understand.
When she has that like caramel complexion with the brown and the gold behind her, and like, oh man, like,
and I think
just incredible
that time in culture. I mean, it became much more acceptable to have like a softer body, like I think, you know, J-Lo was a big part of
it was like, starting like that was like the J-Lo was like the trailblazer, and now you look at like J-Lo's butt, you know, like in the day, and you're like, that's pretty big, but it's not like it's not like huge
butt, I guess,
like it's not like ass technology is really advanced now, like it's really they keep upping the ante, and I'm kind of just like, yeah, go. Like I have not reached a limit so far.
Yeah. We didn't have BBLs back in the day.
Nah.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Cause I feel like a lot of times when we ask that question about like, you know, how attraction is like changed over time, like it often is like just people being like, well, I got older, so like I like older people now, whatever.
Sure.
But it's really interesting that like you kind of had that like with the culture that like, as you know, trends kind of change.
Yeah, kind of, but also it's more like the culture caught up to me.
Yeah.
Like it's more like the culture, like, because I was always like low key, like, yeah, but I kind of like a girl with a tummy and thighs and stuff, and like, and felt like weird for that,
right?
And felt like, why is this so like men, like guys my age in, you know, like high school, whatever, and girls my age were like shaming women for having, you know, butts and thighs,
right.
and you know, they're like being fat, and whatever, and like I remember thinking just like, well, what's the big, like, cause that looks good to me. And like, and like at the same time, like Pam Anderson was really hot, and she has like, you know, big old titties. And you're like, so you expect a girl to have big old titties and then just like nothing else under that. Like, I don't understand. It never made any sense to me. And I was like, why do I like all these hip hop videos so much with like all these butt shots? And cause that was kind of like, you know, like hip hop culture and just, I guess, like, I don't know, Black culture in general, like, got around to celebrating the butt, like, and big thighs, like, earlier than it came around to like mainstream white society. And like, by the time it did, I was like, yeah, thank you, please, yes, this is what I've been saying.
I absolutely love a white man finding out about butts. That shit is my favorite. That's how I know we're cool. Like, you know, like, it's okay if you don't got it, but if you do, oh God. Look, I mean, within the Black community, I feel like, and a lot of communities, I feel like you got no choice. Like you, that's like a part of the person. And it's always been like, I remember like sneaking into my brother's rooms to get like their magazines, to like look at them. And this was the early 2000s, and like, FHM, Maxim, like the people that they would put in these magazines, like beautiful women, but like all of them like crazy skinny. crazy skinny. And I remember looking back at this, like, without any variety in a magazine, like, everybody looks like our culture looks sick, you know, like, to not, especially since I lived in like Bushwick, where like,
yeah,
most people are Black and Dominican, and like, people are thick. Like, there's a wider range of like body types. But like, oh God, what a weird fucking era we're escaping from at all times. Like, Jesus Christ.
Well, Michael and I talked about this. So we did a recording just before this, and like, we talked a little bit about like how men who are attracted to women, you know, are under a certain degree of pressure to only express attraction to like what is like culturally acceptable as like, you know, an attractive woman. And, you know, I, not to be like, well, think about the men, but like, but honestly, yeah, like, think about the men, like, you know, it's hard. So I mean, did you find, as you were like growing up and like developing like sexual interests, sexual tastes, like, that did you find that there was pressure to, I don't know, like, that you felt like there was pressure to like maybe be attracted to a certain kind of person or a certain kind of body? And like, how did you navigate that?
Yeah, a little bit. I felt like I couldn't really be super honest sometimes about like the types I was attracted to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, if there was, yeah, if there was like a girl in class who I thought was attractive, and, you know, it was, I was like having my little, like, you know, every 5 minutes erections over, I felt like I had to kind of first take the temperature of like how my peers and classmates thought about her. Like, A, like, is she like too fat or is she too slutty? That was another big thing. Like, the, and this was another thing that I noticed that like boys and girls would both do, is like, they would put down anybody who like not only didn't fit like a certain physicality, but didn't fit like a certain, you know, like behavioral type. Like, if they were too promiscuous or whatever, as like promiscuous as you could be in like fucking middle school or whatever.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
Like, oh, you discovered fingering. Like,
yeah.
Congratulations. You know, like,
God. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I remember.
Oh, go ahead, Michael.
No, when I got to high school, and I didn't go to middle school. But when I got to high school, our high school had like a middle school, and there was like a rumor about one of the students that got around or some shit like that. And it was like a fingering thing or whatever. And I remember it being like, I went to a Catholic school, mind you. I remember it being like the fucking weird, like, oh God, like, this person is this way. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, why are people so weird? Yes. Like, oh God.
There was a lot of that. There was a lot of like, my friends will judge me if I am seen with this person kind of thing. So instead, I just didn't really, you know, like, I mean, I also was like an awkward kid and like probably would have struck out anyway and was like awkward at like talking to girls and stuff. So like, you know, I don't need to like blame it all on external factors, but I didn't really date a whole lot. I didn't have a lot of game back then, you know, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, so I, you know, as I have gotten older, but even as like a young person, I was like generally like attracted to people who were a bit older than me, like at least like in their like mid 30s and 40s. Like, so have you found that like as you've gotten older, that like your conception of attractiveness has changed a bit? Because I think when I hit like 30, mine did. I thought that I was like already like, oh, like I love older people, so like, you know, that's I'm set. But I think that like once I hit 30, I was like, so many of the things that were important kind of like shifted in terms of like what I found sexy. Like, have you found that to be the case for you?
Kind of, like, you know, back to like me saying like I don't really have much of a type. That's still kind of true. And like, when I say like, I tend to gravitate towards like a softer, more feminine type, like that really is just maybe I'd say like 60%, you know, like, and right. then like the rest is like, I mean, that's the whole spirit of this podcast, yeah. right? Is that like, there's like a bajillion different ways to be sexy.
Yeah.
And so I've found myself attracted to a lot of different types of people. I don't know if it's changed a whole lot as I've gotten older. I mean, you know, like the women I find attractive, like they've gotten older, yeah. You know, like I, and like,
good
as Oof. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm not weird. No, I'm not like going to like Ted Nugent out on you. It's like, I mean, I feel weird now, even like the young starlets that are out there who are like, you know, they're of age, they're like yeah. over 18 or whatever, yeah. but I still would feel like, I would feel weird calling yeah. like Jenna okay. Ortega yeah. hot, you know,
yep.
like,
yep. Oh, yes.
she's pretty, yeah. she's a very pretty
yeah,
girl.
She's a very pretty young lady, and I hope she's doing well in school.
I hope like, she's doing great, yeah, I'm just like, hey, just come up God love you.
I'm like, but Timothée Chalamet, I do not understand. And he's
a little boy, yeah, I hope he's going to class.
Like 3 years younger yeah. than me, and I'm like, still, like, I don't get it.
He's like, if I'm
he's
old
so
enough.
He's so delicate, he's so like, he looks like he's 12 forever. He's like a little boy, and like...
It's strange to hear people talk about him that way because I'm like, you're old enough to be his guidance counselor. Like,
I
feel like
it.
I want to turn my chair around and be like, hey, Timmy, what's going on? What's going on? Why are you talking like that?
Come on I now. Just what? Looked him up. He is 4 years younger than me, but he feels like he is 4 decades younger than me. I don't get it.
I'm worried about Timothée.
Timothée, you're too young. Little like, Timmy Timothée, T.
Why'd you do that Willy Wonka movie? Did you get peer pressured into doing that Willy Wonka movie? Come on, level with me.
Can't did they make you do that?
Did they make you do that?
Who made you do that?
Who made you do that movie?
Who made you do that, Timothée?
Oh, goodness. Well, so, Michael, I think you might have a little game for us, do you not?
I do have a game for us.
Lovely.
But before we get into the games, I do want to get... a sense from you, what movie pairing that you would pair with a viewing of T2 with respect to everything that we've talked about so far. I definitely had a couple locked and loaded, but after the conversation we've had today, I'm going to change my
yeah.
You know, answer. I thought I was really going to drop a bomb on y'all and recommend the Beauty and the Beast show. Like, I thought that was going to be my like Trump card.
Should be. It still
y'all blew
be.
That.
No.
But, yeah, I mean,
go for it.
That would be the one. I mean, yes. There's obviously like I could say RoboCop like would pair well. Yes. I could say Aliens would pair well. But this show, it's really fucking weird and like it's called Beauty and the Beast, but it's not really about the fairy tale. Like,
not at
it
all.
It just happens to be about like a hot girl and a big lion man.
Yep.
And it's written by George R. R. Martin.
Wait,
which is
really?
Insane.
Yeah.
It's pre-Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin.
Oh my God.
And it's all shot on location in New York.
It's
and
insane.
It has that like old late 80s New York vibe to it. It's got this really, you know, they're this like kind of he lives in this underground yeah. like sort of anarcho-communist society with all these like little outcasts of society and stuff
yes.
and like it's a much more interesting show than it should be. Like it's very strange that it ever got made.
James Avery, Uncle Phil from
Fresh
Prince is in this fucking show.
No fucking way.
It's got like my favorite vibe of actor from the late 80s, early 90s. I absolutely love that you selected this as a pairing with T2 because it is a forgotten favorite. They remade it on the CW in the late 10s, and it's garbage. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's gotta be. You can't remake a fucking... That's lightning in a bottle, man. That's like trying to remake Quantum Leap, which they did, and it sucked.
Everything that you said about what made the original great, they do the opposite, and they cast the CW style and look of actor, and the guy they cast as the Beast isn't even a lion man. He's some fucking hot Canadian dude.
Yeah, is he like a Jonas Brother?
He's like a fucking Jonas Brother with a fake scar on his face. It's disappointing. So,
oh no,
terrible.
Oh god, I love that you went as in depth and painted the picture of this show, because it is one that I threaten to do a rewatch podcast about like all the time.
Yeah, we have talked about it.
Yeah,
well, I can't wait to.
Can I give one more recommendation?
Yeah, please.
Yes. Since that one, I had a backup, which is The Iron Giant.
Whoa,
ooh, that's a good one.
It's a boy who's friends with a big machine. There's nuclear anxiety.
Yep.
But it's all backed by like a wholesome Norman Rockwell kind of 50s vibe. And
I love it.
It's just perfect. I mean, it's Brad Bird doing 2D animation. It fucking rocks.
And Shelley, your boy.
Funny. It's sweet.
Your boy, Harry Connick, is in it.
Yes. Yeah. And is Vin Diesel, is he the...
Vin Diesel is the giant.
Yes.
Oscar-winning work. Oscar-winning work.
He actually does a really good job. And they do the same thing where they like cast the robot as like this big meathead, but like it works. And yes. he's like a big sweetheart and you really like him.
And that was back when like Vin was like a proper actor. Like he did like a Sidney Lumet movie. Like he was
a proper actor.
Oh, that's a really good one. That was one of the like, you know, few movies that we would watch over and over and over again in school. It was Iron Giant, October Sky. I think we watched American Beauty a few times.
American Beauty?
Yeah.
Wait.
Let's watch American Beauty in an ethics class.
Let's zoom in on that. What?
I can't explain it. It was Christian Georgia, so I don't know how that came up.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you.
That is the thing that like the conservatives love to do, that where they're like, this is what we're trying to protect you from, and then they like explicitly show you this stuff that you shouldn't be seeing. You're like, why are, like, I wouldn't have seen this if you hadn't.
Yeah, they were all the what's his name, the actor who plays like the army guy who's like closeted and then
Chris
Kevin
Cooper?
Spacey. Yeah, Chris Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
They were all Chris Cooper.
Yes, the other Robert Patrick.
Yes. Oh my god, well those are really really
those
good
are
pairings.
Really good.
Yeah,
I
Michael
love those.
What are yours?
Oh god, I'm all over the fucking place. I was thinking like maybe Aliens, maybe Bound, but I'll recommend two that really do it for me. One, which was a first time viewing today, was Johnny Mnemonic, which I would pair with T2 as like a fuck technology duo. It takes place in the futuristic year of 2021, not too far from 2029. The whole world is connected by this thing called the internet, and everyone is suffering from something called nerve attenuation syndrome, which is like how I feel after going from screen to screen to screen to screen. And Johnny is just a guy who absorbs information and deletes portions of himself and his memories in order to make space for this data that he's shifting from place to place. I love it. It's kind of like a different side of the man becoming machine thing. But as a pairing based on just sex appeal, hotness, horniness, I have to go with the 2012 Dread, specifically for Lena Headey, the other Sarah Connor from television.
Yeah.
she is.
So that's not the one with Sly.
That's not the one with Sly. That's the one with Carl Urban. And
okay,
she plays a character named Mama, who has scars on her face. She looks like an X-Men villain in it. It is a grungy fucking movie, and she plays a grungy fucking person. And she's shredded and ripped in the movie. I love a muscle bound a lady who could kill me.
I think it's a thing, right? It's a muscle mommy. That's like a whole ass term on the internet. Yeah, muscle mommy.
Wait,
he's googling it right now.
The name of the episode. I'm just gonna bookmark this.
Am I? Whoa! Chimachi.
Oh my god. Well, I love that. Mine is not as sexy. my pairing would be The Sacrifice by Andrei Tarkovsky.
What is The 1986. Sacrifice?
It is so Tarkovsky, Russian filmmaker or Soviet filmmaker, mostly made movies in Russia. This one he did in Sweden. And he worked with a lot of like Bergman's go-to actors, like Erland Josephson is the main character in it. My main takeaway from Terminator 2 today is a lot of atomic anxiety. I feel so stressed out about the fact that so many people have access to atomic bombs, and it does not feel good to me. The Sacrifice is about a family living in like a lovely house, like in the middle of nowhere in Sweden. But the patriarch gets this information that may or may not be true, that there is going to be like atomic devastation. And he has to try to stop it. And so he has like sex in the air with a witch to try to change things.
I love this.
That'll do it.
I love this.
And he burns down his house to try to stop, nuclear holocaust happening. It reminds me a lot of T2 because like something that was very upsetting to me watching it again was especially the stuff with Linda Hamilton, like in the like psych ward where like she knows what's happening, but she's being told she's insane. And
that is kind of what it feels like sometimes.
And it's like surviving in the world today. It's like we know that like
when you're seeing like North Korea and NATO and shit like trending on Twitter, and you're like, no, and like,
and you see like all the like can't do fucking shit about it stuff happening, and like it's just like, don't worry about it. Like it, like all of the ice is melting from like the poles, and everyone is like losing their houses to like environmental destruction and fires and whatever. But like, don't worry about it. I'm like,
just chill.
Am I insane that I think this is crazy?
That is what it's. I'm glad you brought it back around to that, Shelley, because like that was like a point I wanted to bring up. Was like, you think about the timeline of these movies. First Terminator is 1984. That's like in the midst of the Cold War, arguably like the closest we ever came to like a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. And then 1991. Which like after the fall of the Berlin Wall and like everybody kind of breathing this sigh of relief and thinking like, oh, okay, like the tension is going down. The doomsday clock is sort of dialed back a little bit. But like what this movie does is just like, no. Those weapons still exist. We're still making new ones and it didn't really go away. And I've had a fuck ton of anxiety over that kind of stuff my whole life, and have really only kind of come around to making some sort of acceptance with it like in the last couple of years, just by accepting my kind of helplessness in all of it and just being like, yeah, man, Skynet's going to Skynet, dude. Like, what are you going to do? Like, well, you know, and like the feeling of powerlessness and watching Sarah Connor as this really willful person who is willing to go to these lengths, willing to like go like spray up a guy's house and willing to like go into the headquarters and burn the place down and like have SWAT teams after her. Like, instead of just being like, I don't know what the fuck to do. Like, that's pretty cool. And like, you know, you wonder whether you would have that level of willpower.
Yeah. I mean, that's so right before we did this episode, we did a recording about Barbenheimer. And so, you know, we were talking about Oppenheimer, and I find Oppenheimer to be a pretty bleak, hopeless movie. And I think that Terminator 2 is actually like, surprisingly, like a kind of hopeful movie, because I find it very moving with Sarah Connor and, you know, with the Joe Morton character, that like, these are people who are willing to sacrifice the comfort of their lives for the greater good, you know, that they could like save humanity, even if it means that like for the rest of their lives, they'll be seen as like crazy people who fucked up. Yeah, I think that there's something very, very hopeful and moving.
Yeah,
about
there
that
is
idea
a
of sacrifice. You know,
there's an alternate ending to Terminator 2 where she's explaining like, oh, you know, August 8th or whatever, like the date is, like it came and went and it didn't happen and like we're all fine, and like, you know, it like goes back to like the playground dream sequence, but it's like happening in real life and like nobody's getting nuked and everything's fine. They're like, yeah. And they changed it to just the dark road and this sort of unknown future, which I think is better. You know, I really only count the first two Terminators as canon, like in my own head. I don't fucking even think about those other ones where they're like, actually it didn't work and they're still Terminators. And like, I like to kind of think that like, no, if they wrapped it up in T2, like they probably averted the whole thing, we don't really know, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the whole, this time, this, I don't know, maybe this is my 98th viewing of this, but the quote, especially watching it so close to Johnny Mnemonic and Oppenheimer, the quote of the future is not set, there's no fate but what we make, like really kind of resonated as like, oh, this is the piece of comfort that I need. Like, I've never felt a deeper sense of comfort actually watching this movie, because it's like,
I'm going to cry.
Okay. Like, you know, things could be much, 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 much worse. You know, we'll figure out this AI thing and this nuclear bomb thing and this global
warming. You know, I did this whole thing like sometime last year, or I guess like last winter. Or the winter before last, like whenever like Russia invaded Ukraine, I just like went and on purpose just watched all the nuclear war movies.
I just love to kind of
confront it. I watched The Day After, I watched Threads, I watched all of them. Just like sat there by myself and just like, okay, cool. This is, this could happen. And just got it out of my system in a weird way and felt better. I don't know why, but I did.
Yeah, I mean, I early COVID, I did a similar thing, and I read the like the famous like New Yorker article about you know, the aftermath in Hiroshima, and I was like, God, I hope if they drop something on New York, I hope I'm right in the middle, because I do not want to be trying to survive after.
Before we get to the next segment and wrap up the show, I have a question for the both of you. And if you haven't seen it, that's okay. I just really hope that both of you do. Have you seen the movie Miracle Mile?
No, but I know what you're talking about. Okay. Yeah, that was like on my playlist, but I never got around to watching that one.
I sincerely
hope. Weird one.
It's a fucking weird one. I really love it because it is so grounded. I hope
I don't know that one. That,
I hope that both of you get some time to view it. It kind of starts off as like, for anyone that hasn't seen it, it's, you know, an apocalyptic thriller, but it introduces you into the world with basically a rom-com, and it
does the Dust Till Dawn thing. It like shifts gears halfway through. He's like this like guy's like, oh, I'm really nervous for my date. Like, oh, is this tie okay? And then they're like, oh, there's missiles in the air. Like, oh fuck. Like, it's great.
It's great.
It's a real gotcha.
And speaking of, I guess, existential dread, I would like to play a game with you both, if that's all right.
Please.
All right. Now, this is a trivia game to finish the episode. It is called Killer Robots. I will read five trailers, and you have to guess the title of the killer robot film. Make sense?
Okay.
All right. All you have to do once you have the answer is say your name. Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
After uncovering a mysterious artifact buried beneath the lunar surface, a spacecraft is sent to Jupiter to find its origins. A spacecraft manned by two men and a supercomputer.
Brad.
Yes.
2001 Space Odyssey.
Ding, ding. 1 point to
nice.
Brad.
Nice.
All right.
It's a good one.
So this is a bit of a two-part question. The synopsis for both these movies were so similar, I decided to combine them into one question to shake things up. So I'll award partial credit. So movie A, a robotics engineer at a toy company builds a lifelike doll that begins to take on a life of its own. And B,
AI?
A Shelley. Mother? No. but that probably could have been C. And then the second movie is a mother gives her 13-year-old son a toy doll for his birthday, unaware of its more sinister nature. Now, these are both movies that came out in the past 3 years.
Oh, ding, ding, Shelley, Megan.
Yes. And what is the next movie?
I have
no I'll give you a point. Okay. I'll give you a point. Brad,
what
you have
the
other one's Child's Play.
I do, I think. Child's Play, right?
Oh,
yeah. Okay. I'll give you both a point. You both get half a point.
I fucking love Child's Play, by the way. The first two Child's Play movies are
fantastic. Love the first one. I mean,
they're so good. Yeah.
Brad Dourif is like my guy.
I love Brad Dourif. Yeah.
The original is great, and then they remake it and they're like, but what if it was a robot? And it doesn't fucking work.
It's not that good. Yeah.
Okay.
What if it wasn't lightning that made the soul of a criminal go into a doll?
Yeah.
It was a little disappointing.
It's a bummer. Okay. Question three. In a dystopic and crime-ridden Detroit, a terminally wounded cop returns to the force to kill again as a powerful cyborg. Yes, Brad.
RoboCop.
Brad, I'm like... I am furious.
For some reason, I decided to describe RoboCop as a powerful cyborg incel, but I stopped reading the question at that point.
He's a vol cell, right? He's voluntarily celibate, right? He like he knows where his wife lives and everything. He's like, I can't do it.
What is involuntarily sexy? Because I mean the glasses scientist who kisses him on New Year's.
Yeah, scientist.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Are you in sexy? In horny? Yeah. In erotic?
I guess he's in erotic.
In erotic. Yeah.
All right. I have two more.
Okay,
for a billionaire and a physicist with gamma-irradiated sperm creates an AI program to protect the world. But when the peacekeeping program becomes hostile, an American vigilante force goes into action to try and defeat a virtually Impossible. I got this from IMDb, and then I made edits, so I didn't punch them up. I just added more confusion to them. So an American vigilante force goes into action to try and defeat a virtually impossible, artificially intelligent enemy together. Earth's mightiest heroes must come together once again to protect the world from global extinction. One might say they're trying to avenge...
I think I got this one.
Yeah.
But do you want to take a crack at it, John? I stole the other one from you.
Take it. It's yours.
I think that's Age of Ultron.
Yes, that is Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
I never would have gotten that. So
good. No, I also added more bullshit.
I would have been like,
I don't remember the thing about the irradiated sperm.
There's this thing.
Irradiated sperm. How did that come up?
So there's like a scene. I went from A to Z with this. But there's a scene where the Hulk is talking about why he cannot like make love with Black Widow, and it's one of the poorer scenes I've seen.
My sperm is too powerful. It'll shoot through your fucking
He doesn't say that, but the thought that went into my brain was, oh, he got that irradiated. He's got irradiated sperm. He can't be doing that. I think about this a lot with these characters.
Love it.
Okay. This is the final one. In a sci-fi fable that positions gender as a tool of exerting male control, an incel programmer is selected by a billionaire tech bro to participate in a groundbreaking experiment.
Shelley. Ex Machina?
Yes, it is. It is Ex Machina. Brad, you won this one. Shelley,
yes.
Valiant effort. There are so many of these Killer Robots movies. I could go on all day, but I wouldn't want to subject you both to the dread of it all.
Thank you.
Instead, I'm going to say thank you to the both of you for today.
That was beautiful,
You're very
Michael.
Welcome.
Brad, where can our listeners find you on social media, and do you have anything coming up that they should listen to?
Yeah, so I'm at Bradical Pearson on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, all of that shit.
Blue Sky and Threads, my God.
Yeah, I got Blue Sky and Threads, no big deal. I don't really post on them much. I don't really care anymore. I have a podcast called Self Worst. Both Michael and Shelley have been on it. It's ongoing. I'm, cranking out new episodes, just dropped another one yesterday. And if you like this show, give it a listen.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Michael, where can people find us?
Y'all can find us on all social medias at Everyone Is Hot Pod. That's Every Number One Is Hot Pod. And wherever you can rate our show, rate us 5 stars. Anything
give
less,
us 5 stars, please.
Anything less, we'll send some robots after you, and that won't be good. That'll be very expensive.
Materialize in the parking lot. They'll have to borrow some clothes, but they'll get you.
They'll get you.
They will, and Michael.
Dun, 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 dun.
We don't know what is going to happen, but if we want to save the human race, what can people do?
Stay horny. If you want to live.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.